Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. ebaymotors.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, welcome everyone to The Distraction here on Fightful.com. I am Jeremy Lambert, and I'm amazing. Joseph, I'm amazing. I'm here with Joe Holbert. You don't get the title today. I get it. I get the nickname today.
Wow. With the context I have as to where we are right now, that was an extraordinary intro choice. I'm going to change that. But I share the sentiment, nonetheless.
Thank you.
We have definitely not just recorded another episode of the show that, like, I am currently concerned. This is like James Harden before Game 7 moment for me. Like, I'm not sure I have the legs to shoot these step backs anymore. I don't know. But we're here, and apparently we're talking about Gene Shultz. That's what I got on the format. I don't know if that's true, but that's going to come up, I think.
Yeah.
Wrestling.
We'll talk about Gene Shultz. Sure. Why not? Okay, we're here to talk about wrestling, allegedly. The show that we definitely did not just record will air on Saturday as we review Wrong Side of Town. Our Thursday show, people who we usually review movies on Tuesday. I had a personal issue to deal with, so our movie review is on Saturday. Thursday, we're here, normal time slot, talking wrestling. Put 5 minutes on the clock. We always go over time, stick to a topic. We never stick to a topic. That's why it's called The Distraction.
Yes.
Joseph is here. We had a big weekend with AEW All Out. Some other stuff happened. I don't remember most of it, but that's why we're here to talk about it, though. Try to refresh some memories.
It is extraordinary to think that this is the show covering All Out, right? It honestly feels like an ancient memory. Our audience must at this point be like, oh, my God, we get it. Matt Hardy. Like, what do you want to
I did the All Out post show, too, with another Brit.
Oh, wow.
I cheated on you with Alex McCarthy.
Hang on. Does that mean I'm going to have to be doing like some shot creation here? I'm going to have to make my own shot, get my own shots? What's happening here? You're still going to have the ball though, right?
Yeah. I still got the ball. I'm going to be looking for that assist record today. All right? That's what it's going to be. I'm going to be dishing out even more assists than I usually do. Not looking for my own shot. Not setting on the screen, not going to the elbow, taking my little jumper there. Instead, I'm going to get there, a little crab dribble in and out, and then look for you. I need you to cut. I need you to cut a little bit on this episode, not just standing in the corner. I need you to cut a little bit. Get those dunks. You've been dunking today. I need some more of that, all right?
Yes, I've been dunking. They've not changed the man guarding me either, right? Same guy dunking on him over and over again.
Yeah.
It's just a shame. But hopefully he will adjust his defensive tactics again. Because otherwise, more dunks will come, won't they, Jeremy? It's pretty clear. In fact, by the time you're listening to this, I may have dunked again. That's where we're at right now.
So, I think the defensive adjustments will be you're just going to keep getting ignored and you're still going to get dunked on.
Yes, exactly that. He just takes another guy when I get to the rim. He's like, okay, cool.
Yeah. Follow the product, folks. You follow us on Twitter. You can see where all our dunks are happening at. Let's get into the wrestling here. We'll go all the way back to Friday, almost a week ago at this point. We'll go all the way back to Friday. Joseph, it finally happened. The golden role models, Bayley fed up with Sasha Banks for reasons, for layers, for faces. just a brutal beatdown on the boss. No longer boss time. Boss is in the hospital. Joe, what did you think of the big angle where Bayley turned on Sasha?
So I have two big positives, and then I have a whole lot of gray area. So the first thing is, this is a rare example of a prolonged beatdown making perfect sense, right? Because no one should have came out to save the legit boss. There's no reason for anyone to want to save her. She has been very mean for a very long time. We agree here, right? Good stuff.
Yes.
I like how brutal it was, and I like the idea. To me, Bayley, the way they've done this, it has to be a major match when they meet, and it will be, obviously, but I don't want obnoxious Bayley here. Like, I know people like it, and you can clip it and be like, yeah, Charlie Crusoe, Renee, whatever. But that is not, to me, the approach to this angle. You need Bayley to be, insane with how attached she is to that belt. This angle was a great step in that direction. She was truly brutal here. So I like both of those. In terms of execution, I can't argue. My issue is that my reaction to it was yeah, sure. I didn't... And this could be a commentary on me more than it is the angle. But I just feel it's gone on for so long that when it happened, it wasn't a shock. It was more like a, oh, they got there. You know, okay, we're at that point now. And I don't know if that's a me thing or not, but that is kind of, that's like a cloud over the whole thing for me. I'm not sure if I'm fully into it, but I think that's maybe more of a me thing. I don't know. It's been a long time, right?
I think it's more of a you thing because based on everything that I saw, people loved it. I thought it was great. My complaint on how they set it up was they almost went too hard on commentary. Corey Graves is like, oh, big things are happening tonight. They teased it a lot on commentary that this stuff was going to happen. And then when it did, I was ecstatic that it happened. They didn't need to drag it out any longer. I thought they were going to drag it out longer. And I was just like, how much more can you get out of this? But I thought they tipped it a little bit too much with the commentary. And I would have not had Corey Graves and Michael Cole beat over the head that, oh, big things happening tonight. Look what's going on here. They dedicated not even just the beatdown. I think Sean had it 42 minutes worth of this program between the interview, the match, and then the beatdown. 42 minutes of SmackDown was dedicated to Bayley and Sasha in some form or fashion. So they had plenty of time. They've had plenty of time for months now to do this angle. I'm glad it happened. I'm glad they pulled the trigger on it. Now we will see the follow-up. They've got directions to go with Bayley, obviously. She's got some contenders, mainly Naomi. You could put in Lacey in there, maybe even Mandy Rose. A lot depends on how long you're keeping Sasha out, because I'm keeping Sasha out at least until the draft. I'm moving her to Raw, and I'm not having them touch. I could even see them keeping her out until Survivor Series, and then she's a surprise entrant on the Survivor Series team. I've even seen people say keep her out until the Rumble, and she's a surprise entrant until the Rumble. That's a little bit of a stretch, but if I'm not keeping her out, I'm keeping her away from Bayley.
Yes,
at the very least.
Okay, so this, I want to circle back to that, because that is a very interesting booking element of this. I don't want to stress, when I say my critique, this is a hit, by the way. And anyone that says the WWE audience doesn't like long-term storytelling, the WWE audience actually loves this whole thing. I don't know if you said it, right? Everyone loved this. So this has been a success in every which way. I'm a big part of my enjoyment moving forward will hinge on the next step. Why was this the moment for Bayley to make that decision, right? I need something there, because they were together for an awful long time. The draft... So since they got put
together
on SmackDown,
Sasha returned because the timing was, I think the turn happened on September 3rd, September 2nd of last year was when Bayley attacked Becky Lynch and aligned with Sasha. So it was a whole year since Bayley attacked Becky that they've been together.
So I don't want to I can't criticize because I haven't seen it yet, but it will very much kind of live and die with me by how they frame her decision. Is this Bayley saying she has no use for Sasha anymore? I don't know. I can't, But that's a big part of it for me, because I am not as invested in, just the idea of the match as some people are. Does that make sense? Some people, it's like... Now, the interesting subject, and we always talk about how we like to discuss the sort of, mapping stuff out for wrestling, and I find it often is very nonsensical with WWE. This is an interesting case. I personally think the Rumble idea is, like, insane. I don't think people realise how long, how far in the distance that is. You know, that's like, what are we talking here, Jim? Maybe four months?
4 months.
Okay.
Four and a half, so, really.
Yeah, so, I mean, that would be, I don't think this division is flourishing in the way where it's like, yes, we'll leave out perhaps our best performer and most popular performer for 5 months, 4 months. You know, like, I think your approach, if WrestleMania is the end game, your approach is the correct one. The first match they have should be WrestleMania. She should win the Rumble, which then she chooses Bayley, right, after being on the other brand. I'm not as keen on the, they can wrestle three times and that's the blow-off. Like, I don't know. I think there's something to be said for that being the big match. The other option, of course, is, and this should not be quoted as a report, but if you have any interest in Evolution 2, that's the match, right? Like, clearly, unequivocally, that's the match to do. So that's just something to keep in mind, because I know the October pay-per-view schedule is weird because there's, like, a show on the first week of November, right? So that's just something to keep in mind. That's all.
I don't think there is a show in October. I think...
No, that's it. It's like it goes, like, the last week of September and then the first week of November. So, like, there's a slot there, you know, on, like, the second or third week of October. I don't know. I'm just praying.
Well, if everyone watches the replays on Fox Sports 1 of Evolution.
Oh, my goodness.
Remember that one?
That was a deep cut.
Yeah.
That was strong.
Yeah.
He's listening right now, and that is shook. That's dangerous. Dunk. Bad.
Look, if you watch it, WWE's paying attention, all right? If you watch it, they'll bring it back. I hope Evolution 2 happens at some point. I think the women deserve it. I think the fans deserve it. I'm kind of sick of just hearing about it. Like, sick of just... Either it's going to happen or it's not. And right now, there seems to be no actual traction that it's going to happen. But I hope it does. Again, my personal layout would be Banks gets drafted to Raw. You keep them away from each other. They're on opposite teams at Survivor Series. Even at Survivor Series, I'm not having them do too much. I'm having Bayley kind of run away from her and everything. Keep them separate. Banks wins the Rumble. You go from there. She chooses Bayley, obviously. You build to the big Mania match. You get the Mania match. You even do the rematch at the next pay-per-view. And then the rematch, because even the rematch is going to sell, because the whole thing is Sasha can't defend her title. So in her first title defense against Bayley, that's what you're selling that on. It's like, all right, you beat me at Mania. You've never defended these titles. Like, I'm very confident I will beat you at what Backlash is usually the pay-per-view after Mania.
Yeah.
So you've booked this thing all the way to late April right now.
How do you... Well, I agree with everything you said, and this is a little bit of a side note, but I do want to kind of bring it up because someone mentioned this to me and I thought it was interesting. How do you feel about Evolution almost being like them tying the bow on, like, okay, this is what we did to get here. And now moving forward, there is no need for Evolution because Banks and Bayley is a main event match on any of these dumb pay-per-views, right? Like, it is. Do we need an Evolution? Like, I haven't got any strong opinions on this. It was just an interesting way of framing it. Someone was like, you know, they used the past, they paid sort of homage to the women that set those, set things up to get there. And I understand neither of us are the voice to discuss this, but I'm just sort of throwing it out there. Is there something to be said for, there's no need for Evolution 2 because these women are the main event now. Like, Banks and Bayley, you could argue, is the hottest thing in the whole promotion. So, I don't know, that's just an interesting little element of that whole Evolution show, I think.
I mean, I think if you can hold off Banks and Bayley until Mania, that's kind of your main event
at Mania. Right? Like,
right now, I mean, they'll have Brock there, and they'll have something if they're. But will Roman...
they, Jeremy? Will they have Brock? He could be wrestling for the pure Brawls Ring of Honor title for a winner. We don't know.
Like, they'll have matches and whatnot, but like that would be the hottest program. I think if you just do Evolution in October, you've almost sacrificed the long term story here just to do just to do this match because you need a headliner for Evolution. Like, I wouldn't do that. And let's be honest, like, they can do Evolution. I think it'll be a good show. If it's on October, that gives them what, 4 weeks to build this pay per view. They have nothing for these women. They have done absolutely nothing with these.
Hang on a second. Mickey James and Natalya is a red hot match. I want you to know that, okay? They could do some, because I guess you've got like 12 tag teams splitting up, so you could always just do those matches.
But they just did Peyton Royce and Billy Kay and Raw.
Forget them. Just rewatch them. No problem. I think it's interesting. I loved Evolution, but like if it was just like a one-off thing and it like marked sort of changing of, I don't know, it's fun. I mean, I'm with you though, that as far as WrestleMania main event, like just looking at what's on the table right now, Banks and Bayley are in with a real chance of being like the absolute main event for that show, which would be pretty cool.
I just don't want them to do Evolution just to do it when there's no stories involved. Like legitimately, if you did Evolution a month from now, what are you putting? Like, you're not getting Trish back for this. You're not getting Lita back. I mean, maybe they will, but I can't imagine they're coming back to wrestle in this Thunderdome or anything. You know, Becky's out. Charlotte, I don't know. I don't know with her. You know, the Bellas are out. You know, Ronda's out. Like, these are all key parts of Evolution. You're using the women that you have on the roster now. Don't get me wrong. All these women are talented. You haven't done shit with them in 6 months. So I just don't see what you're doing.
Jeremy, Alexa will be in Hollywood by then. Yes, too, right. Exactly. So, you know, it would be a tough card to put together. Now, I'm with you. It's a kind of side of it that I hadn't really thought of before. So I thought we, as two male voices, would explore that here on the podcast. Nonetheless.
Also on SmackDown, Jey Uso won a Fatal 4-Way match that he wasn't originally in, but Big E got taken out by Sheamus. Jey Uso inserted, wins it. Jey Uso against Roman Reigns at Clash of Champions. Cousin against cousin.
I couldn't be like more in on this. I actually love that it's totally fresh and random, but still makes perfect sense. And more than that, I love that it's not, you know, when Jinder got elevated and it was like, this is random and wacky, but it kind of sucked too because he'd lost 100 singles matches before that. This isn't that, right? Because Jey Uso just hasn't been a singles wrestler.
Right.
So in terms of like how you're framing the show, there's a nice element of unknown there where it's like, he's never had to be in this spot because he's one of the best tag teams ever with his brother. So like, I love that dynamic. The big takeaway with all this though is that Roman is not like this whole bit with him and Heyman. He is not just being Brock Lesnar here,
no.
Right? Like, this is a very different approach in which it almost seems like Heyman is like, he's like paying a debt to Roman almost, right? Like, he's talking all harsh and, you know, he's poor, he does the gun fingers and all that good stuff. But Roman, I think everyone knows he would always been a great heel. His pure, like, body language and his physical confidence and charisma was extraordinary on SmackDown. Like, I thought he looked so much more comfortable in this role than he has in a lot of his run. Now, I thought for the last couple of years he kind of figured that out anyway. But I'm just excited to see Roman in this role. And more than that, I'm pumped that his first title defense is a match that he can win in 8 minutes without it being like a classic and it ain't going to hurt the other guy. You know, like, that to me is all of this I can't be more on board with. I think it's great.
I like that they added a story to this almost meaningless title defense, because you knew once they announced this Fatal 4-Way match, the original people were Big E, Riddle, Corbin, and Sheamus. You're thinking, you can't give away Big E now. Like, not if you actually have plans with this guy down the line. Like, you just can't. Roman's not losing at Clash of Champions, okay?
Exactly.
Anybody can report that, all right? Jeremy Lambert from Fightful says Roman Reigns will not lose a Clash of Champions. I'll be correct on that. All right, I'll tell everybody. Keep following me for more accurate scoops. He's not losing a Clash of Champions, so you don't want to do Big E because there's no real drama there. Riddle, you don't want to quite do that because I guess they have plans for him. You don't want to just squash that right away. I thought, all right, Sheamus or Corbin win. You do a little 2-week feud, however long this pay per view is before the pay per view. He beats him in 30 seconds. No harm, no foul. They switched it up and they're like, you know, let's put Jey Uso in there. Like you said, you got an actual story in there. You can do 6, 7, 8 minutes on this match. Roman can look great. You give Uso some hope spots because he knows him well, and maybe Roman's still wrestling with things in his head and whatnot. However you want to lay the match out. But it'll help Jey because he's going back to the tag team once Jimmy's healthy, so he'll be fine. And it'll help Roman because it'll show off a different side of him, and it'll give him a quick victory where he's not sitting in a chin lock for 4 minutes in the match.
Yes, all of that co-signed. And even just in like the most sort of pure fan way, it's just fun to see one of the Usos like doing single stuff, right? Like they are such remarkable wrestlers.
You love the Usos. You got them the smoky promos with the lockdown cage and everything.
Wonder where you're going with that one, but yes, I did with the smoky promo. But you know, they're a terrific team, one of the all-time teams. But because of that, and because of the promotion, and especially, and just kind of their act in general, like there's no need to see them in singles matches other than the classic, you know, one Uso wrestles one guy, that whole tag team build that they love. Yeah. And their matches never mean anything. I'm just interested in what they produce here. So that part of it as a fan is cool. And then all of the reasons you stacked up, it's hard to look at this as anything other than a home run to me. I also think, I mentioned about Roman's whole, like the persona and such. Backstage segments are like the ultimate quality swing in WWE, right? Some of them are so contrived to the point where it's like, I could not possibly care. A victim of that often is poor King Corbin, who will find himself sort of wandering around aimlessly before running into like Chad Gable. And it's just, it always sucks. But when you have guys who are comfortable with what they're, you know, going to deliver and they have that kind of chemistry, Roman and Jey Uso stuff was so compelling without doing anything. You know, like the dynamic of Roman almost being like understated. And he wasn't, you know, doing the kind of mustache twirling heel stuff by any means. He was just, he's different. He has a different approach. We still know very little. We just know that Paul Heyman seems like almost in fear of Roman. It's fun, man. They give us enough that we want to come back, but they didn't give us the whole thing. And like, here's Roman's whole motivation and stuff. You know, it's like, they give us enough. We get it. But I want more character development. That's a big term for this show. Character development. And more layers, Jeremy, is what I really want. No, but seriously, I thought this was great. I'm all for it.
I like that Heyman, because it wasn't just, all right, it's Heyman with Roman instead of Brock.
Yes.
I thought that was Heyman's best promo he's done in forever. Because all the Brock promos feel the same. They've felt the same for 2-3 years now. This one, like you said, he was more subdued. I like that more, like, he felt in fear of yes. Roman. Like he's there to, as you said, like pay a debt with everything. So I thought Heyman was great. Roman really shined in those promos. And Jey Uso, you got a little bit more out of Jey Uso than you would mm-hmm. expect. And the dude hasn't been on television since, I guess, Mania when Jimmy got hurt. So it was good to see him, and he's in a good spot. I thought this was great. I thought SmackDown was excellent this past week. I was in a terrible mood. I thought it was an excellent show.
I think, I know that this was part like me being silly, but I think SmackDown has actually been pretty good since like everything shut down. Now look, there have been weeks where both of us have messaged each other like, this show sucks. On a whole, the last 6 months, I think it has been far better than Raw. Yeah. And I don't know if that's the consensus. What I do feel with SmackDown is, even if some of the stuff sucks and I don't like it, or that's wrestling, right? There is an element of like, I want to tune in because I feel like I've missed something. I haven't felt that with Raw since the late 90s, Jeremy. No, but it's seriously, like, I do. There's an element of SmackDown where it's like, there's some stuff going on, there's some hooks for the show, and that's all you can ask for. Where they go with it is a whole other matter, and you know, I have faith with this. By the way, have you watched the new version of the Talking Smack, Jeremy?
I've watched bits and pieces. I haven't watched, like, the whole show.
There's a really neat little narrative element that Jay put in, where he was explaining, like, he kind of loves Paul Heyman. He was talking about these, you know, the family's history of Paul and all that great stuff. And he was like, you know, I can't trust him. I'm not sure what he's here for, but I love the guy. And it was like, man, there's a whole theme you can go with there that is just great, fits both guys perfectly. So this is weird. We're doing like we've changed brands here, Jeremy. We're about to bury all out too. We have changed brands.
We were trying to, you mentioned that Raw's felt the same since the 90s. We were trying to come up with topics for Raw, and this past week was legitimately, if you watched a month ago, 2 months ago, you watched this past week's show. And definitely if you watched last week's show. Dude, we had Keith Lee and Randy Orton wrestling for the fourth time in 3 weeks. I know one was a three-way match, but like, the same match. It was legitimately the same match they did in Keith Lee's debut. Garza and Andrade against Street Profits has been going on for 5 years now. The only thing that happened on Raw was Cedric joined the Hurt Business, and the Mysterio family beat Buddy Murphy like he was a pinata, which I thought was hilarious. Yes. Otherwise, Raw was 3 hours of nothing.
1 week, you're going to just be like, next topic, Angel Garza and Andrade. Are they splitting? and we're going to discuss it like it's a brand new. I'm actually convinced we covered that pre-WrestleMania. It's September. I mean, I'm all for long stories, but that one isn't even a story. It's just like one scene.
That's what it is. Like, these aren't stories. It's the same note over and over again. And it's like you're not advancing anything. You're just doing the same thing. And then when the turn happens or whatever happens, you expect us to care. And it's like they've been doing this same thing with no motivation, no actual advancement for 3 months now. I don't care about any of this. Yeah. Raw sucks.
I do want to say, though, and I know that everyone's given them enough love already, but it can't be overstated how valuable the Hurt Business is to that show, right? Yeah. Like, it is actually insane that Bobby, MVP, and Shelton are providing them with, like, minimum 30 minutes every week. Like, I don't like to, you know, I don't know what their process is. I think I have a pretty good clue, but I don't know. But there is 100% element of just, like, we have 3 hours to fill. Man. Like, it's, I get it. And boy, are they helping in that regard, right? I mean, they did, what, 2 6-man tags this week? I guess the second was an 8-man. They did a VIP. Like, anything they can do to help the show, they're doing it. I would like my friend Bob to get a nicer, a more prestigious title around his waist, though, than the one he has. I accept it for now as a consolation. This advanced that. I want the big one. I want the big goal, which doesn't exist anymore. That's what I want.
I think you'll be waiting a while. Unfortunately, maybe he can get the Raw Underground Championship. I don't know when the finals is for Raw
Equally
Underground.
Equally good. Yes. Also good. Look, the Bob thing, at least he's not doing terrible marriage angles with Lana. That's a win, right? Like, massive win. So there you go.
What happened with that angle?
I legitimately forgot
that Bobby Lashley and Lana were married for, like, 2 months. Yeah.
She called the wrong play at WrestleMania and Aleister Black kicked Bobby in the head.
Oh, all right.
And then, because when he beat Lashley, that gave Black the momentum to turn heel.
And Lashley the momentum to get a title shot, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Wins and losses do not matter.
We've learned that.
I understand, like, if your criticism is they should, fine, I'm with that. We can talk about it. I kind of agree. However, I cannot stress enough, they do not matter, okay? It's pretty clear at this point, but yes, I'm
they
with
do
you.
Not. Let's talk about All Out. We're going to start with the topic that was the topic from All Out. Matt Hardy took a bump, hit his head on concrete. It looked very bad. He looked out unconscious for a moment. He was purple in the face for a moment. The referee, Aubrey Edwards, tried to stop the match. Matt got to his feet, stumbling around, could not stand very clear. They did stop the match. And then after 2 minutes or so, they decided Matt was fine. They could keep the match going. They finished the match. Matt was obviously supposed to win. Matt won. He was taken to the hospital for precautionary reasons. Tony Khan says he doesn't have a concussion. Rebby Hardy said he'd 1,000% had a concussion. He was on Dynamite. He said he's going to recover from his injury. I don't know what his injury is. If he didn't have any injuries after the doctors, this whole situation is weird, and it put a big damper on All Out.
Yeah, so I was going to say, I mean, one of our topics is like All Out in a grander sense.
Yes.
But, I mean, these are the same, because one of them had a major impact on the reaction to the other, right? Now, I think there are a lot more issues with All Out than just this alone, but it was clear, in terms of consensus, this had a big impact. So that's definitely a kind of group deal. So I completely share everyone's anger and disappointment at the way they handled this situation. However,
oh my God,
I think more focus needs to be dealt on what are we doing here? How is no one saying, you know what, Matt? I don't think you should take that bump. I'm sorry. I may have missed the memo, Jeremy. You've listened to 100 Matt Hardy interviews and transcribed 99 of them. The whole point of Broken Matt and all that silliness was it let him work smarter, not harder, right? Matt is known for being a creative guy who has found ways to adjust and stay relevant without killing himself in there. I'm sorry, man. This is insanity. Like, we have become way too comfortable with professional wrestlers doing actual stunt work. That is not what this should be. I'm sorry. Like, this is my take on it in general. That was not even the finish of the match. That was the opening spot, effectively. What are we doing at that point? It's like a cut-off spot. Him spearing him that far onto a table, two tables. So, to me, that's where this links with the show. AEW is, on a personal level, my favourite show to watch, Dynamite, each week. Okay? It's the direction I enjoy talking about most. They have a serious quality control issue. They need some filters sometimes. And this show had a ton of examples of them letting guys do dumb stuff, unnecessary stuff. And this obviously takes cake because of all that happened. And yes, I got to stress, I'm with everyone that didn't like the handling of it. It was dumb and it was terrible. However, I grasp that, like, you know, they're in a kind of frantic state. They're panicking, this, that, next thing. It sucks. It's wrestling, right? But man, Matt should be smart on this. God bless him. I hope he's well with whatever his injury is. And is no one stepping forward and saying, no, we don't need to do this. Let's be honest here, Jeremy. No one bought the pay-per-view for that match. And that's not a criticism of them. That's what the situation was. We don't need that bump coming one match after a battle royal in which we did a body bag thumbtack powerbomb onto a ramp with steps on it. At some point, we've got to accept, like, yes, it's great. You're giving the audience as much as you can, and I appreciate that. I really do. But the audience doesn't want to be made to feel uncomfortable. You know, like, come on, let's rein this in a little bit before something worse than this happens. That's all I would say.
They were fighting on a scissor lift. And as you said, they speared them through two tables that they overshot. And AEW apparently cracked a million for Dynamite last night. Breaking news.
Cool. Just as I did that rant about their issues.
They didn't go up against NXT, but hey, yeah. You know, good on them.
Yes, I agree.
So it was 1.016. So just got it, you know, still okay. Good on them. Where was I at? Oh, they were on the scissor lift fighting. There was a spear through it, through two tables on the concrete. And yeah, Matt, they overshot it. Matt hit his head. Like you said, that was an early spot in the match. The finish, I don't know if this was supposed to be the original finish, if they audibled on the fly, whatever they ended up doing. The finish was very similar of just, yes. They climbed a scaffolding and then Sammy fell. Maybe he was 4 feet higher in the air when he fell off the scaffolding through the tables down below, the staging area below. It's like, you just did that spot as a non-finish, and now you're going to do this as a finish. This is an issue they have in matches. We're going to talk about the whole show. We're not going to talk about this match. The pre-show match between Dark Order and Private Party, John Silver does this like spinning power bomb, and they're doing like German, like some of the combos Dark Order did, and like that wasn't the finish. Like, this should be the finish. Do finishes that are actual finishes, and like you said, the stunt work stuff. Like, don't just give this stuff away and have it be a false finish on this stuff. But the problem is they do all these false finishes in regular matches, so they feel like they got to do all these crazy false finishes in gimmick matches as well. And it's like, why do we have to do false finishes, crazy stuff like this in gimmick matches? Just a crazy bump like that should be the finish.
And here's my absolute least favorite, and this is not about Matt Hardy, this is about the concept in general, which is, it, to be clear, this is my choice to go this way, because to be honest, I mean, everyone has discussed Tony Khan and the hand, we've all done that at this point, right? Like, so this is just, we're talking broad here. If you do the stunt safely, it will look terrible because it will be so phony looking. How many times we see it with WWE, right? They'll do a big stunt and it'll be like, no one buys that. You can see all the padding, the mat. And so guess what? Just don't do it. if your safe way of doing it makes it look less like sort of wow. And the other way is, yes, let's just risk poor 45-year-old Matt Hardy's head. How about we go with neither, right? Like, it's because here's the thing. We get lost sometimes in what this audience is. We often, with the casual fan stuff, I know that's a joke now, but the audience that bought this pay-per-view, I can promise you, they just wanted to be entertained. They did not want to see poor Matt in serious danger. I mean, he was, you could see, it was a striking image when he hit the floor, right? Yeah. That was a man.
Legitimately thought he was dead.
It was terrifying. And, you know, I don't want to kind of, speak for the whole audience. But at the same time, I don't think people bought this pay-per-view because they're like, man, I want to see Matt kill Sammy. It's like, that's not what this show is. It's more like a... Like, people want to see the performance. I know it's going to annoy people. That's the truth, isn't it? Right? Like, people like that. How many people, Jeremy, did you see say, I'm buying this pay-per-view because I think FTR are going to have this classic match? Or, you know, I mean, that's really what AEW is. So that makes it even worse because no one's buying the spot, the stunts as being actually dangerous, even though, here's the kicker, they are incredibly dangerous. Like, it's just, it's, and the saddest part of it is Matt is so much smarter than this. And the whole thing of him going there was he can be a coach and a mentor. And it's like, come on, Matt. Like, what are we doing here? You're doing the worst kind of stuff. So, yeah, obviously the whole thing sucks. I hope Matt is well. I don't mean to, like, kick him while he's down. I just, we need to be a lot less tolerant of just being like, yeah, like they just do these full-on, like, movie stunts now. Why? There's no need. The best stuff on this show, and we're going to get into all that now. I know I'm rambling. I'm sorry. But the best stuff on this show was the professional wrestling. It was not the, you know, wild, oh my God, what an idea stuff. To me, anyway. So that's all.
And continuing the match was just so Matt could win because of the stipulation.
So dumb.
That, yeah. I don't get that either. I just, he didn't need to win. You know, all right, I get he leaves AEW. How many times have you done it to where it just comes back? You know, a guy just comes back. Oh, they left the promotion forever. They come back. Matt Hardy's got 15 different personalities. All right, Matt Hardy's left the promotion. Here comes Damascus or whatever. He's still in the promotion.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to continue it just to give Matt the victory. And I'm pretty sure that played a part in why they continued it. And that put them further at risk. It was handled poorly all around. It was a bad idea. It was bad execution. It was bad follow-up. And it completely, exactly. It killed the vibe for the rest of this show, which we're going to get into now, because the match between Thunder Rosa and Kirishita had to follow this match. They had a great match. No one cared, unfortunately, because of what they had just seen with Matt Hardy. But what else did you take from this show?
This show alarmed me in some cases. And, you know, it's probably about quality control, but that's a very broad term we can kind of isolate in now. So just straight up front, I thought Mox and MJF was a very good main event that fell victim to an incredibly long show. And it was very WrestleMania main event to me, you know?
Yeah.
I thought FTR and Hangman and Omega was very good. I know it seems like I'm in the minority on that. That's fine. I liked it very much. And as you said, the women's title match was terrific. However, there was a feel to this show that I don't, as much as Matt Hardy certainly heightened the issue, I thought it was there from the start. There was this sort of, and I've, you know, come to realise the heat and such, the audience was kind of suffering sitting there, right? But at some point, someone is going to have to explain, like, look, here's the deal. AEW has a great roster now. One of our next topics will kind of be another addition to that. The pay-per-views are not your chance to say, look how many great wrestlers we have. I think this show would have been far better for having Darby and Ricky Starks in place of the whole Battle Royal, which was like a perfect example of just stuff happening, right? And that, to me, coming two matches after the two for now deal, which I'm sure you loved, I thought just set the tone. And then when you have Matt too, it's like, geez, this is not going well. So I was left it feeling as though they are kind of, some of their faults had come more clear over that 4.5 hours, or whatever it was. That's all.
Do you see how much this sun is coming
yes,
in?
Yes, it's
me?
Amazing.
It's crazy.
You currently look like an album cover. It's extraordinary.
it's amazing. I'm just looking at yes. The shot here. I thought that it was way too long. Mm. I think WWE has actually done the right thing during this era yes. of like, hey, 2.5 hours. I don't think any pro wrestling program should be longer than Raw. All right, like that's 3 hours. That's way too much. I understand it's a pay-per-view. I don't think any program should be longer than Raw. 3 hours, cut it off. That's all I want to see from these shows.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to do the Battle Royal, I would have moved that to the pre-show. I would have, because they moved the Tooth and Nail match off of the pre-show, and it was a dumb match. I actually didn't like enjoy it that much.
It kind of sucked.
Yeah, it wasn't very, like, they had some campy moments, but even those campy moments just like weren't all that good.
Yeah.
So they moved that off the pre-show, and instead of replacing it with a pay-per-view match, They just put two cold matches on the pre-show. And don't get me wrong, I like the Dark Order and Private Party match. I thought it was good. But and then Janela and Serpentico, why did those need to be on the pre-show? Put the Battle Royal on the pre-show. They could have put the eight-man tag on the pre-show with Dark Order and on those guys. They could have put the Bucks and Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus on the pre-show. Like, they could have easily moved that stuff instead of, all right, let's keep our main card the same, essentially add another match to it, and then throw on two pre-show matches. If you want to say, hey, the pre-show is important, and you should tune in, and this is to get you to buy the show and everything, then put important matches on it. Like, you're just putting cold matches on this pre-show. Yeah. It made it feel like just any other WWE pre-show. Way too long. Yes. FTR, Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, I thought that was too long as well. Edit that down, cut it down. They did all that work on Omega's leg that meant nothing. Like, he just... It was just...
He walked off.
Yeah, it was just nothing. It felt like the crowd was just, like, waiting for the turn and waiting and waiting.
Yeah.
And because it never came, they were just like, oh, okay, that's it. The finish was weird, too. Omega's just standing there on the apron. Something just didn't click in that match. The main event, I like that match, too. But that's a case of, all right, you've already gone long. I don't need 10 minutes of chain wrestling.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you had an extra hour in your day, what is the first thing that you would do? Read a book, take a nap, play some video games, do something for a friend, volunteer? A lot of us spend our lives wishing that we had more time. But the question is, time for what? And if it was unlimited, how would you go about using it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important for you and to make it a priority. And therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. Therapy is so valuable. It's gotten me through some tough times, really helped me reflect on things that are important, specifically with BetterHelp. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be the convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. This is so beneficial when you've got that crammed schedule and you can't even imagine finding that extra hour. You can do it all from home. Fill out a brief questionnaire, get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Fightful today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Fightful. It's so flexible and it can help you find that social sweet spot with BetterHelp. That's BetterHelp.com/Fightful.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
To start this, like, once once the blood happened, I thought it really picked up. That should have happened about 8 minutes sooner. It was just a long show. I didn't think it was like a bad show. It was the worst AEW. Yeah. It was the worst AEW pay per view, but it was too long.
Yes, it is important to note that, like, objectively speaking, it's a good show, right? Like, it had like a handful of matches we liked. So therefore, like, most sort of consensus standards, it's a good show, right? It wasn't like we had nothing to enjoy on it. But watching it was a very different experience than sort of explaining it match by match, right? Like, I do think the Tooth and Nail, going with that as the opener, I think was like an all-time insane move.
Yeah.
I think about it, it's so strange. Because, like, the whole thing with the pay-per-view, especially with their pay-per-views, they have 4 a year and they are very expensive, right, Jeremy? So, like, people are in, they're like, let's go. And it's like, welcome everybody, here we go to Britt Baker's Dentistry. What? Why are we doing this first, you know? Use that to space out stuff later. If anything, if Hangman and Omega and FTR wasn't going on last, perhaps they should have gone first, because they were going long. I don't know. There was just a lot of strange decisions that, like, AEW has done a really good job of being, like, they've been competent in areas I thought they could be shaky for a year. This show was like, okay, let's bring them back down to earth a little bit. The wrestling gods, almost, JBL, was like, you know, let's bring them back down to earth. There are holes there, and that's fine. I think they'll be better off for this show. But I have to be honest in saying I didn't enjoy watching it that much, which bummed me out, I got to say.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of anything else on the show that stood out to me. I thought Sheeta and Rosa was great. That was a Sheeta gave a lot in that match, and they're bringing back Thunder Rosa to do an NWA title match next week on Dynamite. So I don't know what the deal is with Thunder Rosa's contract with NWA. I know she has a lot of big aspirations, and she should. She's very talented, both in the ring, on the mic, behind the scenes. So I hope the best for her. And you know, if this lands a full-time gig in AEW, more power to her. But I thought that match was great. Like, there were some, like you said, there was some good wrestling. I just don't need a 4.5-hour show. I mean, you tack on the pre-show, this show didn't end till 11:30. Like, it's just, it's too long. Way too long.
And I think we spoke about this before. Like, we've done 2 AEW pay-per-views before this one, I think, since we started this show. And like, I will often say, my biggest criticism of their shows is they try too hard at every moment. Like, and often I think that's fine. Like, sometimes matches go too long, and I just sort of go, yeah, they're on pay-per-view. It's expensive in the modern wrestling landscape. Let them be. This was the first time it actually had a negative impact, right? Where it was like, not only are they trying too hard and going too long, it is now making me enjoy the rest of this. Like, man, when Jericho went out there to do the Most of Mayhem match, I was like, please, I can't watch Chris T's taking this bump any longer. Like, it was just, we were so deep in.
That was a weird match because they're like, oh, pinfalls and submissions count too. Like, you're not going to do a pinfall. You're not doing this big vat, 2 vats of mimosa and be like, yeah, Orange Cassidy just wins with a roll-up here. Like, I didn't even understand why they added that to the match. Just, he's got to go into the mimosa. That's going to be the finish. Why bullshit and be like, yeah, pinfalls and submissions are here.
It would have ruled if Chris just like submitted him with the Walls of Jericho. Like,
I was hoping that, or someone just like slipped and fell in it. It was like, screw it. Just...
By the way, while we're on this show, we spoke about the Battle Royal. I didn't like the Battle Royal. I don't know about you. I've seen some people say they really liked it. I thought it sucked. So
what, the Battle Royal?
Yeah, the 94-man casino Battle Royal.
Yeah, outside of Darby's bump where he nearly... That guy, by the way, talk about just doing stunts.
Calm down.
Yeah, like, you don't need to be taking all this stuff every single week, every single pay-per-view. Like... A blind power bomb with a thumbtack body bag? Like, what are you doing, dude? What are you doing?
In the Battle Royal. Like, why? If you're going to do that, you could have saved it for Dynamite. And at least it would have been like more of a headline. By the time that show ended, it was like, Darby did what?
People completely forgot, especially after the Matt Hardy stuff. People completely forgot that Darby took that spot.
By the way, this is what I was going to say. It's the Battle Royal. Eddie Kingston, like, purposely went under the bottom rope, and it was pronounced as possible. He mentioned it on Dynamite. I know we're going to talk about Dynamite with something else, but just quickly, are we assuming they're going to make this a thing? Was it always a thing? Is it them reacting to an accident? What do we actually think is going on with that whole deal? Because Eddie just mentioned it, and it's like, okay, cool. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, he mentioned it at the end of his promo on Dynamite. They've already announced the Moxley and Lance Archer match. Like, they're already building towards that. I would assume that we do in an Archer and Kingston, because the Moxley and Archer match is until like mid-October, so they're like gonna build that match. I would assume we do an Archer and Kingston match at some point between now and then, of like, hey, I wasn't eliminated, like, you gotta actually beat me type of thing. If not, I don't know. I don't know what the point of that was. I don't know if it was an accident. I don't know if they did it on purpose, but regardless, like, it happened. You gotta follow up on it.
I thought the finish of that match, and I'm an optimist, Jeremy, as you know, this podcast is very optimistic, but I thought the finish of that match was an indication that AEW kind of realised the people are rooting for Eddie Kingston, because, like, he's a heel, right? And Archer is a heel, and he was the last guy thrown, and he's like, they're kind of doing the thing with him where he's the, he's like the lovable rogue, right? Like, he's not a nice guy by any means, but people root for him. That audience that was dead silent for the majority of that show, because it was obviously so hot and it was long, they were with Eddie Kingston as he battled with Lance Archer and Jake Roberts' bored snake that would not leave its bag. So I just would... It would be interesting if they inserted Eddie in some form or fashion, because then you could protect Archer. I'm just... Archer and Moxley, it's weird. I really enjoyed their Tokyo match, but like, it does nothing for me in the AEW land, and I don't really know why. Again, that may be a me thing. Jake Roberts, the stock is beginning to decline for
yeah,
me.
Okay, I'm gonna be honest here. I think that's the bigger issue with Archer, is that I'm not sure Jake Roberts is helping him right now. Yes. Like, that initial promo on Cody, fantastic. Awesome. Everything else since, where he's talking about busting nuts and shit, like, just...
Very sexual, man. Yeah. Very sexually driven, man. Yes. Incredible here. It makes me actively uncomfortable, which I know is his intention. But, like, I often watch the show and be like, man, if I'm uncomfortable right now, I can only imagine how some of the audience feels watching this.
They got to put Jake and Jim on a timeout for a little while.
Hey, look, we actually kind of need to talk about it, because it was, like, so flagrant. Man, I mean, he seemed like he was on his best behavior at Dynamite. And I would hope that's because someone spoke to him.
I mean,
about
he
it.
Was on his best behavior, but he was even bitter on stuff because he was like, "Oh, can't say that. Gonna get yelled at about that." Like, he was clearly, he was clearly bitter about what was said to him and the reaction to him.
Look, write it out. Renee Young will be here soon, Jeremy. Do you like that? That's just where I'm going with this.
It's gonna be a while for Renee.
Yeah, sure. It's... Do you remember when Renee left WWE and someone was like, "Hey, it'd be fine if she went to AEW," and people were like, "Shut up, you loser, ESPN." And then she interviews was like, "Yeah, I might just start in wrestling. Seems fun." That'll be fun. No one will get mad when she shows up in AEW, right? No one ever gets mad when WWE stars show in AEW. Moving on to our next topic.
Our next topic is Miro, the former Rusev, did show up in AEW. He was the best man for Kip Sabian, straight out of Cisco, Eminem, 90s with his bleach blonde hair. Cut a promo, basically just said, not in the same house anymore, not under the glass ceiling, shove that brass ring up your ass, it's Miro day. And that was it. What'd you think of this, Joe?
It was a little bit like surreal. It was like a dream. It was like, oh my god, like Impact. It was very, dude.
The shot from behind, like, that was like straight out of what they did with Christian Cage when he debuted.
Don West, Impact.
Like, it was very Impact. Very, very Impact.
Before we get into, because I mean, both of us love him, right? Like, this is not him.
Yes, I love Miro.
It genuinely came across like a satirical, like, take on the classic WWE guy promo. And like, I haven't got a problem, because I think generally the AEW audience enjoys that stuff. And if he's just one reference, like, who cares, right? He does one promo about it, move on. Putting him in this thing is a bold move. Now, here's the deal. Looking at that roster, we have Brian Cage, Brody, and Archer. It actually probably is a waste of Miro to be like, yeah, he's going to just come and be like a tough guy heel that beats people up. Like, he's better than that, right? He's more versatile than that. However, I'm not sure you want to extend his range this far. I mean, it's his first thing. My hope is he will beat up the Kip Sabian very badly soon. So I'm happy to see him. I think he's a terrific talent. One of the most, like, legitimately misused guys I can think of.
Yes.
But somewhat of an alarm bell, just because of, like, watching it, I was like, oh God, I've seen this story before. You know, poor Aaron Ricks. I've seen it. I've heard it. Just be careful. That's all I'd say.
It was, I'm happy he's in AEW. I do love Miro. I think he deserved much better in WWE, because yes, he is such a talented and diverse performer. This was such a cold debut. Just so cold. Coming out with Kip Sabian. Like, no one cares about Kip Sabian and Penelope Ford.
Hey, come on now.
No one
cares. That's my countryman, Jeremy Lambert. Don't go after the Brits.
It's been a tough day for your countryman, Joe.
Yes.
No one cares. It's actually been a tough couple of months, if you think about it. But
yes.
Yeah, no one cares about Kip Sabian. And that promo, I don't mind the shots at WWE. It's a war, you know? Have fun with it. Who cares? It's not really a war, but have fun with it. Who cares? It felt so weak, though. It just felt like everyone expects me to say something about WWE. I'm going to say something about it. And like he said the exact same thing, like, or really just like the most cliche thing, brass ring, glass ceiling. Like, all right, we heard this one before. His look, that blonde hair, it ain't working.
It had that feel. And again, I don't think this is the case. I'm just telling you what I, as a viewer, felt. It really felt like a guy that couldn't turn down the money. It did. Yeah. I'm sorry. The way he looked and his whole tone and temperament, he seemed excited when they chanted for him, but his whole sort of like demeanor was that of a man that was like, I can do this and Twitch stream. Like, it's easy money. I can't go to Japan for a while. Let's just do this. So I am so optimistic about what he can be, but I'm not going to pretend that this left me like super enthused, because it felt a little bit like, yeah, I'll have some fun in AEW. Like, nothing else is going on right now. I hope that isn't the case, because he could be an awesome addition to that roster. I hope he is.
And this is the issue. We talked about it when WWE released these guys, when we had our basically like draft board of, all right, who do we think is going to be these players? It's like, well, you're going based off potential of what we've seen in WWE. So many guys just get beaten down by WWE, and then once they're out, they realize the freedom, and they realize, hey, I don't really need this wrestling stuff right now. Like, I'm just kind of checked out on it. But then someone comes along with a big money offer, and they're like, sure, may as well do it. Like you mentioned, Damian Sandow, Aaron Rex, like, perfect example. Everyone is like, this guy is going to be can't miss. Like, the stuff he did with Miz, all so underutilized. And then he just goes to Impact, and he was just checked out on all of it. And he's like, yeah, I don't care about this. Mm-hmm. I hope that's not the case with Miro, but it certainly seemed the case last night. And now, if you're AEW, like, you're adding another top talent, another guy who you can position very well. And look, there's only so much television time. There's only so many spots that people are going to get. AEW loves to be, we're the alternative, we're doing something different and stuff. It's not always about ex-WWE guys for me, because everyone comes from somewhere, but you keep collecting these guys, that's going to push down these guys you were hyping up at first, like your Janellas, like your Private Parties, like your Jungle. I think Jungle Boy and MJF are pretty safe, but like Proud and Powerful, like, you've been hyping these guys, and now you keep bringing in these ex-WWE guys. Guys got to get moved down the pecking order because of it.
It's a real thing. I mean, I don't want to, I certainly don't want to be the guy that's like, just sign everyone, it's fine. Like, it's a real thing. The issue comes when people like act as though an ex-WWE guy should never get another job in wrestling. Yeah. That's when it gets weird, right? But I'm with you. I'm a big FTR guy, but I think there's an argument that their insertion has perhaps cut some other teams off. You know, like, maybe that's true. I don't know. I can't really recall. Like, the Lucha Bros weren't around when they came in, right? So, I don't know. I'd have to investigate that. But they have a lot of good tag teams. And currently, the division is being built around FTR, because that's what they deserve, as they've been signed here. That could happen elsewhere, and it could be a problem, right? Because often we talk about, in the women's division, they need help. To be honest, man, the male main event scene and the tag scene doesn't need any more help. It's actually excellent in terms of depth. I mean, Ricky Starks, I know we're biased, because he's one of our best friends, Jeremy, right? I am equally friends with Ricky Starks as you are, as you know.
He buried my wardrobe and then came out and looking like, I mean, he was trying to be Darby Allin, came out looking like that on national television. I don't like Ricky Starks.
Do you know, he messages me every day since I missed that appearance. When we were getting, every day, when can I come back? I say, Ricky, it's hard. We have Firefly fun. Stop.
No spoilers. Almost a spoiler. Yeah, almost no spoiled spoiler. That one.
So, he, by the way, in all seriousness, has been, like, extraordinarily good. I mean, he was awesome on Power, but, like, the spotlight is way bigger here, and he couldn't have, like, fit it more, right? Like, he's, like, just embraced it. He's rolled with it. So, they have so much talent. They have to be... And that's why, should we complain if Miro is just, like, a fun comedy mid-carder? Like, I will complain, but should we? Or is it actually just a guy being like, I'm cool here, push these other guys, it's fine. I don't know. Maybe that's something we're going to see more often.
I mean, even if it's that, like, you're still taking away television time from somebody else who could fill that role. Yeah, I mean, Miro, he's probably going to be better at it than a lot of people, but he's still taking away time. This is an issue. I mean, I ran into it on our TEW series. I run into it every single time on TEW. I want to collect all of this talent, and then I realize, oh, yeah, I just got like Adam Cole doing nothing. I'm just burying Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman because I don't have any actual use for them, when in any legitimate promotion, these would be two of your top guys in the promotion. And I'm just like, yeah, I don't care about these guys. I'm going to just put them under the entire time. Like, this is what happens when you do collect all of this talent, is there's simply not enough television time for all of them to actually tell stories. I mean, we talk about their women's division and, you know, everyone's like, push the women. Some of the women, they're not ready to really be pushed and all of this stuff. But if you keep collecting these men's talent, you're never going to be able to push the women because you're not going to have time for them.
Because it's a real fit. Like, it's a real thing that when the women will get like a 5-minute match. Like, I'm not going to lie, I will sit there and think like, yeah, like there's so many guys to fit on this show. I get why they're not being like, okay, now we're going to give Big Swole a 10-minute promo. Like, I get it. That is not me saying it's good or right. They should do more. But I'm just saying, like, it's a real thing already. It will get worse as they move forward. So a second show that they keep talking about, that Cody definitely didn't
announce. Go Big Show. The Go Big Show is the second show.
I mean, maybe that will help. That's going to be very interesting how they use that. Because their audience does seem willing to watch another show, right? I mean, Dark's obviously been a good test for that. And then they've been doing these Evolution reruns to test the audience, right, Jeremy? So that's fine. Miro, we're both very excited for him, and we love him as a talent. We are just a little bit cautious after seeing the demeanor of the man. He looked a little bit checked out on debut. So there you go.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with Miro. Hopefully it's good. Hopefully it's good.
Yes.
That's it. Anything else from Dynamite? That Dynamite was a fine show. I don't remember half of it. That was a fine show.
Oh, Brody and Dustin was like Jim.
It was good. Yes, it was very good. I did troll a bunch of people on Twitter with my comment. Did you not see it?
I don't think so.
No. Oh my god! I even said like this is a troll comment beforehand, because people get very mad at me over this stuff. But my tweet was just like, oh, the alternative where 51-year-old Goldust faces 40-year-old Luke Harper in the main event.
You're mean. You're very, very mean, okay? I do not appreciate that, Jeremy, but I respect it as a Twitter play. That's all. But
people were very mad about that. For some reason, people were ragging on Finn Balor. Oh, NXT, the young brand, 39-year-old champion. Whatever I know.
No NXT title, but...
We're bringing it back if something happens. We're bringing it back.
If Dustin... This is the truth. The biggest compliment to Dustin Rhodes is that I now feel it's not worth talking about how good he is at his age. Like, it feels embarrassing for me to be like, how good is he for his age? Dustin Rhodes. Like, he's so good that it's not even a topic anymore. I have moved on from the fact that at 50, Dustin Rhodes is one of the most compelling in-ring performers in the world, in my view. That's where I'm at, okay? Give me Ed Kingston versus the natural Dustin Rhodes, who is also a nightmare, and I may not do the trade request that I'm pondering right now.
Why are you pondering this trade request, by the way? Is it because of All Out?
Blue Brand is looking... Listen, man. Richard...
Oh, I was wondering where you wanted to go. So you want to go to the Blue Brand?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying Pritchard gives me Stan Van vibes. Okay. Kind of guy I like playing for. That's all I'm saying. He trusts me. I could see it being a good fit. I'm not requesting a trade, to be clear, folks. I'm simply making some requests, once again, in a polite fashion. That's all.
You're just doing due diligence on what else is out there, weighing your
other
options.
Other suitors, yes. Okay. Exactly.
All right. I get it. I think you should stick with one team. That's just me. But I know that's not how you are.
Too late for that. Yeah. I mean, I've already been on like 4 teams. At this point, I may as well just continue the path I'm on.
That's fair.
Championships, Jeremy. I want championships. You know this.
Are you excited for Stan Van Gundy to coach your Sixers?
Okay, let's get into this. I'm not even doing a bit. I would rather Stan Van than Billy Donovan. That's where I'm at. And it's not because I think he's a better coach. I'm just like, at least there's like a wacky element to him. Billy Donovan legitimately feels like I was just signing up for being like, let's just do the same thing again. Like, I am not, and I've told you this many times, I'm not educated enough on the game to give you like a breakdown of why he's a good or bad coach. However, his playoff resume would suggest to me that it is an awful, it's like a sideways move from Brett. I thought we wanted a guy that makes in-game adjustments and has like experience winning What are we doing? It's the same thing.
Billy Donovan made the Western Conference Finals, all right?
Yeah, exactly. And look at that win. No, it's not good. To me, we've always spoken about off-air and on-air, but we are tired by the fact that our teams were tremendous at finding ways to lose.
Yes.
But why am I switching coaches with someone that also shares this trait? What are we doing?
Maybe that'll change it. What if we just traded teams? Like, the entire Sixers roster came to OKC, the entire OKC roster went to Philly, and we'll just see how it works.
You would love if you got Brett with that crew. If you just get the team, they suck. I hate them. But you would love Brett. He's glorious. Here's the deal, though. There is one scenario in which the Billy Donovan is very fun. CP, here's the offer, officially, on the table right now. Mike Scott, what? Zaire Smith, and a second. Who says no?
For Donovan? Sure.
Whoa. Chris Paul we're talking about here.
No. Garrett. No, I say no to that deal.
What? Mike Scott's like 36% from three.
Yeah, good for him. We got Mike Muscala to shoot 36% from three.
That's very disrespectful, but also true. Zaire Smith could be something in this league. You know
could
that,
be.
Right?
That's what I hear. People really try to talk into Zaire Smith.
Every trade, every single Sixers trade that is done by a Sixers fan who doesn't want to put Matisse Thybulle in every deal he belongs in, he's like, Zaire Smith, there he is, $3 million. What are you thinking? Poor Zaire, it's not his fault, right?
Super high on Thybulle because, like, we got Lu Dort. What do we need Matisse Thybulle for? Like, but that's legitimately the best prospect the Sixers have, right? There's nobody else who you're thinking, like, oh yeah, this is a guy who you probably want to include in a deal here.
So, the deal is, I'm biased because I think they deserve to get Chris Paul, because I think you'd be insane to take Harris or Horford. Like, you know this is where I legitimately stand.
Yeah, he talked me out of this trade.
Dude,
last
honestly,
night.
They shouldn't do it. But am I being a fool here to think that, like, if they pulled it off, Paul Simmons and Embiid is like,
it's really
I
good.
I don't know if I'm, yeah, like, I feel like I'm fooling myself again, but I would legitimately believe we had, like, a chance. I don't know why. Because our issue is we haven't got a guy to close games. Chris Paul was tremendous at that this year, you know? I don't know.
You would 100% talk yourself into this being good. And it is. Like, it is. And then they would just Sixers you, because that's what happens with our teams. I've learned this very much. But no, Chris Paul is a guy you need because he can play off ball as a spot-up shooter for Ben Simmons. Chris Paul's very well shooting the ball from three. He can attack off the dribble, especially if closeouts are late and things like that. Yeah, you got a guy who can close games. You know, Chris Paul's whole MO this year is he wasn't that great in the first through third quarters. He just kind of controlled the game, played at his pace, did Chris Paul things. But it was mainly Schroeder and Shea doing the heavy lifting in the first three quarters. Fourth quarter came, though, it was like, all right, Chris Paul's just going to take this over. He's going to get that little elbow jumper that he loves. He's going to hit all the big shots. Like, he's going to do what Chris Paul does. And that's exactly what you need in Philadelphia. It would be a very good thing. I, as a Thunder fan, Tobias Harris, both those contracts suck, by the way. Mm-hmm. Just awful. Tobias Harris, I think, can be like a good 1B option. Like, I'm kind of talking about, he was good for the Clippers as a 1B option, okay? Not of that money. That money completely scares me. And if he doesn't turn out to be a good 1B option, it's very tough to move. Like, the best case scenario with him is he proves himself in OKC, almost like Chris Paul. Is like, he kind of has a resurgence year. People realize, oh, maybe it was just the Sixers situation that was really bad for Tobias Harris. Maybe playing him with four other guys who are 6'5" along with him wasn't the best fit for this guy. And when you put him around, like, guards who can move the ball and create their own shot and stuff, he does a little bit better. Maybe we'll take that contract. And it's the same thing with Al Horford. It's just a matter of, is that going to happen? And if it does, can you sell people on those contracts?
I want to make it clear now, in case it does happen, that I am under no, like, I'm fully aware that as soon as Chris Paul arrives in Philadelphia, he will injure himself or get, like, infinitely worse. Like, I want to be clear.
He's a vegan now. He's a vegan.
But I know the truth. It's already in my mind. It's done. Okay. But I'm just, in the most optimistic sense, I don't really get why they wouldn't. Because when I see people saying that as a reason not to, it's like, look at the team now. Like, it's obviously not ideal if Chris Paul turns up and gets injured, but, like, the team isn't good with Horford healthy or Harris healthy. Like, I think it's worth the risk. My issue is I just kind of refuse the idea that we'd have the best offer. I mean, I don't know what his value is, but it just seems unlikely to me.
And that's the thing, is there's going to be multiple teams after Chris Paul, after what he did this season. Milwaukee's got to go all in. They just have to, because last year of Giannis, he can say, I love it here, I want to be here long term and stuff. Until he signs that contract, those words don't mean shit, because we've heard that from a lot of superstars before. And they got to do something. Great regular season. They failed in the playoffs this year spectacularly, but even last year wasn't great. So they're there. If the Lakers don't win it this year, they're going to have to – LeBron, he's 35. Something's got to change there, I would assume, because, I mean, Chris Paul's not going to make them younger, but it at least gives you another very talented player. Miami, if they don't make it, maybe they make some changes. There will be teams out there for Chris Paul. New York is just going to be a connection because it's New York. So there's going to be the offers out there. Does Philly have the best offer? I don't know. I still think Sam Presti's in a very good position. And as far as Donovan goes, you don't want him as your coach. I think Billy Donovan, by all accounts, very nice guy, did some good things in Oklahoma City, some great regular seasons. The playoff record speaks for itself. The failures, I tweeted this stat yesterday, and I harped on this before, 16 straight playoff road losses. I don't even get how that happens. And then in those losses, because they've lost 16 games, that dates back to 2016. Just to 2017, in their 16 losses since then, 8 of them were double-digit losses. And, like, 3 of them were by 20 points. 2 of them were, like, 30 points. Like, their margin in the last 4 years in the playoffs was, like, minus 136 or something. Like, when they lost, they lost spectacularly. And when they won, it was just, like, close games where you just happened to win. And some of those wins, like, the Westbrook-George game where they each had, like, 40 and Westbrook shot, like, 40% from three. Like, that's not good coaching. That's just Russell Westbrook hitting shots.
Yeah, and it's like, I know it's a bad fit because he always comes with that disclaimer that Britt did of really nice guy. But it's the same. And the way that he, like, Westbrook had amazing numbers. You know, I know both of us, I think, are pro Westbrook. You obviously very, like, you know, kind of sincere fandom reasons, but I just enjoy watching him. However, I would not say Billy did a terrific job of harnessing Russell Westbrook as far as, like, and that is the worst thing to me, because look at our two guys, man. They need some kind of direction, you know?
And like, Dennis Schroeder said it after last season of, like, yeah, Billy didn't really have much control over this team.
He's like, Brett. He's the same person. It's the exact same person.
It very much seems like that. Like, Schroeder was a little nicer this year of, like, oh, yeah, things change. Things change because Chris Paul is more adaptable than Russell Westbrook will ever be. But really, like, to me, it always comes down. Billy Donovan could be coaching right now. He could be coaching game 4 tonight if he just benched Steven Adams for 5 extra minutes. It really comes down to that. You don't want Billy Donovan. I think he'd be great in somewhere like Chicago, where the expectations are low. They can kind of rebuild. They can ease into things. If you want, like, title hopes and things, he's just not the guy who's going to get you over that hump. Similar
Do
to
we
Brett Brown.
Think it could be Ty Lue? Like, seriously, I don't know, but there are some very interesting quotes about, like, how good he was at playoff tactics and such. You know, it's just interesting. That's all.
It's an interesting thing with Lue because, I mean, he won a title, right?
Right.
You can never take that away from him. Everyone just credits LeBron for that title. Like, no one gives Lue of, like, yeah, he did some spectacular coaching job. It's just like, Klay Thompson pissed off LeBron after game 4 and LeBron said, no, fuck this. And then he came back from 3-1. Like, that's what it all comes down to. And, like, Lue hasn't had a job since the Cleveland job. He's an assistant with the Clippers now. you know, we'll see how he does. I think Lou can be fine. He's got the title to always fall back on. I just don't know, you know, I don't know how much of a credit that was to him, because LeBron coaches,
right,
whether you like it, yeah, or not, they're just not going to get the credit. Like Spoelstra did not get the credit until really these past couple of seasons, where it's like, oh wow, he made the playoffs with that roster. Yeah.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
now you're seeing, oh yeah, this guy is actually a good coach. Like Mike Brown, we found out, not a good coach. They were good because LeBron was very good. Who else has coached LeBron? I don't know, but I feel like it was Mike Brown, like 300. What's his name? David Blatt. I don't know how good of a coach he was, but LeBron just basically ran him out of the league. So it's tough when your success as a coach is tied to LeBron, how you're going to fare without LeBron.
The one agreed element of him that encourages me is it does seem he was pretty big on like holding LeBron accountable. And it's like, I mean, that's as much as you can do with LeBron, right? Yeah. Like he has the ball in his hands, so he's really making the decisions out there. Like you with Chris Paul, I think they were a better playoff team with Chris Paul because of that reason. He's the same way, right? He's making decisions in there's only so much Billy Donovan, the Adams thing. Very sad. But we do need a coach that's gonna come in and like give clear direction and like parameters to our two stars. Billy Donovan, from everything I've read, heard, and seen, is just not that guy. And to me, that's the main thing, because X's and O's and stuff, I don't know, not the guy for that. But it certainly doesn't seem like the personality fit. Have we done like 20 minutes on Billy Donovan? Yeah, it feels like we have. Peak distraction.
Not quite, only but like 12.
We were heavy hitting with the wrestling chat today, Jeremy. Did you not think that? I said I wasn't ready for game 7. This was a 40-point
triple
double.
You were built for it. You were built for game 7.
So many emojis. Yes. So I can't spoil Saturday's show. Promote Saturday's show, Jeremy, because
yeah, I can tell you what we're going to talk about on Saturday. Yes, let's get to the 20-minute outro now.
Yes.
Saturday, we will review Wrong Side of Town, starring Rob Van Dam, Batista, in that order, Viscera, yeah, who's there, Ja Rule, and some other people. I think it's a fantastic show. We're wearing the same things we're wearing now. We didn't shower one bit these past couple of days, but and then look, stick around for that show. It's one of our shortest shows, but it's worth it.
Yes. Incredible finish.
Yes.
All-time great finish.
Yes, an all-time great finish. The TEW series is done. That is one reason why the movie review was Saturday. Go back, check that out, see how SummerSlam ended in a spectacular fashion. We popped Sean with the finish of SummerSlam there. We'll have the TEW finish or TEW series back in a couple of weeks. A new universe. We've pretty much got it all detailed out. It's just a matter of sitting down and doing the work on it. Follow Joe on Twitter at JoelHolbert5. He's going to be writing the Dominic Mysterio feature at some point. What else do you have on social media besides dunking on fools, Joe?
Well, before I get there, you have a match to pick for next week, right?
Oh, I do. So we've kind of skipped out on the retro reviews the past couple of weeks. It's been my fault. Last week, I just forgot. And then this week, I was supposed to pick. And here we go. I'm going to pick. Great American Bash 2000 Human Torch Match, Vampiro and Sting. Andrew Thompson's biggest fan, Vampiro, by the way, and Sting.
That was awesome.
Yes.
In fact, that's the perfect segue to my next point. I have a public service announcement, that's the word correct, for any members of the professional wrestling media. If, by any chance, you're a fraud, phony, hack, liar, or cheat, I would suggest you come forward and announce yourself as such and start producing some content that isn't lists like 5 ways the legit boss Sasha Banks can face Bayley. That's all I'm saying. This is not aimed at anyone in particular that was dunked on today. I'm just saying, if you are a liar, fake, phony, fraud, hack, cheat, come clear. Now, with that in mind, I want to give credit to Andrew Thompson, who is the best. We've said this before, right? The best. There are many talented people, and with that in mind, I will reiterate my new weekly, daily message. You can send me any content you produce about wrestling. Audio, video, written off, whatever. I will try my best to either share it with the people that can help you or help you myself. I will try. I've done this with a few people before, very talented people out there that don't get any attention because there are frauds, hacks, liars, cheats, and charlatans. So with that in mind, that's my closing
Shysters.
Statement. Dominic Mysterio article will be out eventually because I produce real content and don't make up stuff. And as is such, Jeremy, I had the ball for a long time there. Shot clock violation. But I felt that was important. Here you go, pal.
It is very important. Produce content that you can stand by, folks. Like, that's... To me, that's what it comes down to. Produce content that you feel you can stand by. I mean, I guess these people feel they can stand by it. They can't. It's shit content.
Yep.
It's lies.
Yes.
And it's fake.
It's
very fake.
Studio scoopsters, I call them, Jeremy. Studio scoopsters. They're not about that real scoop life, are they?
No,
Jeremy?
These... no.
But yeah, this isn't about anyone in particular. Carry on.
If you do want fake scoops, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm passing them out like candy. I actually got banned from doing my own fake scoops bit. I got in trouble for it. What nonsense that was. I have so much credibility, Joe, which is not true, that I got banned from doing fake scoops.
Amazing. Truly amazing and incredibly ironic when you look at the landscape. But here we are. You've got to, look, Fightful... It can't be having you doing that to the reputation. You're on Reddit all the time.
Yeah.
You tweet just like, you'll do like a cold take, which is like, Finn Balor's not that old, and people are like 400 retweets.
I know, I could not believe.
It's so over, it's crazy.
I could not believe how many likes and stuff that had. I was just like, I didn't think this was a big deal, but I'm Reddit scoopster now, Reddit famous. Yeah. I'm apparently getting mentioned on other podcasts. Yeah, this is a thing.
Wow.
This is the thing. Okay. So I won't out the people who did this, but I did get a DM from somebody that a pretty big website, the person from this was like, yeah, they want to run your article on the Raw script being rewritten. Like, they want to run that as a report, as a tweet. And the person who also writes for the website was like, he's just joking. Like, it's just a bit that he's doing. We don't need to run that. So that's why I got in trouble for my fake scoops bit, because legitimate websites were like, oh, Jeremy's got credibility. He writes for Fightful. We can run this report as truth. No, I don't. You'll know when I have a scoop. All right, everybody, you'll know. I'll pass it to Sean and he'll put it out there. And he can have all the credit for it, because I do not want to be a scoopster. Fake one, I think it's fun. I don't want to do that. I don't think I could do it with a straight face, honestly. I like doing joke shit too much to be able to do that. You can follow me on Twitter, though, at JeremyLambert88, where I am amazing. And I'll be doing a secret video game stream. If you want to watch me play 2K this Saturday, follow me on Twitter and give me feedback on that, because we are starting the Fightful Gaming streaming next week, hopefully, with 2K Battlegrounds, assuming everything goes well with the underground streaming that we're doing this Saturday. Assuming everything goes well, we will do an actual live stream that'll be on our page, but I need people to show up on Saturday night to give me feedback on that stuff. So there you go. We'll be back on Saturday with our review of Wrong Side of Town.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.